Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, you know, again, October is coming on us, and we're moving forward. Real important information. Congressman Rodney Davis out of Illinois, again, has put on an extremely strong letter to the new Secretary McDonald, the Secretary of the VA, demanding that they immediately solve all the problems and not worry about the 90 days, but get everything fixed. So, Congressman Rodney Davis, we get a big salute to you. Aaron Schock, also Illinois, a big salute to you. And the 14 other congressmen that have stepped up to the plate. Well, you know, it can't get much better than that, can it, Denise?
Nope, and I've got a few announcements. We're waiting for our guest today to sign in with us, Dan Sullivan of the Sullivan Center, and hopefully he'll sign on shortly. But in the meantime, I've got some announcements. People, get your paper and pencil out. Okay. First of all, we have a research project that is recruiting subjects from all over the country and I think even overseas. This is a research study out at Palo Alto, California, and I'll be going into it on October 19th when I was out there for the RIST study, which is a referral program, and we'll talk about that briefly. The RISC are three centers that you have to be referred by your VA physician to. It depends where you are in the country of where you go to, but the one out in Palo Alto pretty well serves anybody west of the Mississippi. Then you have two on the East Coast, Orange, New Jersey, and then also D.C. But you have to get a referral from your primary care doctor at the VA. When you get a referral, they take you out for basically Monday through Friday. You get out there on a Sunday and then go through the study, and then you're home by Friday evening at the latest. But that is a referral program. Now, each of the RISCs have research going on. There is a research currently recruiting that I'll be in. As I said, I was tested and approved for the study when I was out at the RISC. And this is a VA researchers are studying whether symptoms of chronic pain can be improved using the repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulator. And this is for veterans of the First War. Okay, so if you served 1991 in theater, they need participants. There will be a screening visit. What you do is you'll go out, and the first thing they do on the first day is a complete physical, separate from what you've had done at the VA or at the RIST Center. Then they'll test you on the machine. They have to get a response, and this is a magnetic stimulator that applied to your scalp. They have to test to be sure your skull, your bone in your skull, is not so thick that they can't get a response with the magnetic stimulator. And they'll put it on, adjust it, be sure you get your thumb will raise up if you get a response. You're sitting there resting, and they're testing the amplitude. It is FDA approved. And they have to be sure that you can get that stimulus, get a response before, you know, continuing on with the program. For those that are across the country, you can enroll. They will provide the air travel, the hotel, a car back and forth. They'll give you meal coupons at the hotel. There's a complimentary continental breakfast. And then you get the voucher coupons to eat in the cafeteria at the Palo Alto VA. And you do get some small stipend. If you're coming in from a long distance and not within California, it's 2 weeks of treatment. Then you have to go back at 6 month and 12 month interval to be followed up. There's 20 sessions of the RTMS or SHAM. Okay, you're either going to get the real thing or not the real thing. At the end of the study, they open it up, and if you got the sham, they'll repeat and give you the real treatment. So it's a blinded study. You're up to $200 for completing the entire study. Entire. That includes the 6 and 12-month follow-up trip. All the travel is paid for, putting you up, getting a car to take you back and forth. The phone number to get into the study, 650-852-3233. They're trying to recruit a large number. So please call, get into the study. Let's get this study done. That number again is 650-852-3233.
Now, this is aimed at reducing all of our chronic pain symptoms?
Yes, it is a chronic pain study to see if it relieves your pain. Okay, and basically, it takes about an hour a day. The rest of the day, you're free. Okay, they can only do so much each day and for a total amplitude and all that. So, like I said, the first day, you will be tested, you know, put through a physical and tested. If they can't get the stimulus, that's over. You're sent home. They've got to be able to get the stimulus on you that first day to continue on. If you're in California, they also want you, but it can be stretched out longer time period because you're able to commute in. But anybody having to fly in have to get it done, and it's within a two-week period. So that is one of the research studies that I'm going to go through. And I recommend others get involved and go through that study. Another announcement. There is going to be a field hearing of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, the Subcommittee on Disability. This involves the Philadelphia VARO, VA Regional Office on Claims. Now, that will be this coming 3rd of October, okay, at 11 a.m. at Burlington County College, Pemberton, New Jersey, Lewis Park Center, and that's at 601 Pemberton Brown Mills Road in the Geraldine Clinton Theater. So that's 11 a.m. on 3 October, and that's concerning the Philadelphia VARO, but it's being held at Pemberton, New Jersey at the Burlington County College. So we want to let all the vets know that's open to the public. You can attend. Again, that's at 11 a.m. on 3 October, Burlington County College, Pemberton, New Jersey, Lewis Park Center. And that's at 601 Pemberton Brown Mills Road, Geraldine Clinton Theater. So that's the two off the top of my head that I wanted to get out to everybody. Now we have another study that's recruiting. Mainly, if you're living in the Baltimore VA area, there is a study going on up there on the sauna conducted through the University of Albany. And it's a detox program, and you need to live up there for this because it's an ongoing study. It's eligible for the first Gulf War experiencing health problems. And what they do is use sauna and other treatment to try to see if you're going to respond and have detoxification. This is a Hubbard treatment, Dr. Root. The study coordinator, the phone number for Crystal Grant is 667-217-0218. So this really needs you to be local to participate because we don't have any funds for housing or travel. And so that creates some type of a problem there. We're trying to get those problems corrected, but if you really want to do it, maybe we could do a FundMe site on the Internet to help raise money. Again, the number to participate is 667-217-0218, and that's Crystal Grant, who is the coordinator. And so this is an important study, too, that they're asking for people to participate in. It's natural. It's non-invasive. Daily sauna treatment, high-dose vitamins and minerals. And so it lasts 4 to 6 weeks. Okay?
Now we know ourselves personally from what you and I experienced down in Dallas, Texas, with those incredible, incredible people down there.
Right.
This is sauna treatments along with the IV therapy for nutrition is absolutely wonderful.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
and
there's no doubt about that working, but again, you know, again,
people,
caution on this. You got to be under a doctor's direct, a nurse's direct supervision.
Right. These people have done some of this before 99. They came to the CDC conference on Gulf War illness in 99, and it took them until of late to get a study funded to participate. But again, it's in the Baltimore area, so there's a need for people that are close by, can drive in and do that. So I wanted to get that word out. We'll have more studies recruiting shortly from San Diego, from Florida, possibly Boston. Each week I'll update. As soon as they are ready to accept participants, I'll keep you all informed. Today we're hoping to have Daniel Sullivan call in. Has he called in yet? We're hoping he will join us. Until then, I will talk to you about a little bit about the Sullivan Center. Daniel Sullivan, who is hopefully going to call in, is a brother, and the family has formed a nonprofit organization. Daniel is the president, CEO, and co-founder of the Sergeant Thomas Joseph Sullivan Center. It's a 501c3, and what they're going to do primarily, although there'll be other things, but they want to get the medical research done that is not funded through the government, through VA, or through the CDMRP, to have another funding source. So we'll be calling for donations for this, and we'll be looking for people to help us, get in touch with people that can donate money. Right now they have a matching fund set up for the Georgetown study with Dr. Bronick. So we definitely want to support these people. His brother, a Marine, came home, and he was post 9/11 Gulf War from Iraq, had the Gulf War symptoms. The diagnosis didn't come out well, and Sergeant Sullivan did die. And so the family, out of recognition of what's going on with hazardous exposures, have set up a nonprofit center. Dan, are you with us yet? Okay.
Okay, hopefully our guests will call in. I mean, it sounds like this is an extraordinarily important project. I mean, there's so much research and so much medical care and treatments that can be looked at that aren't being done, and that comes into a shortage of funds and also a shortage of political will to do this. So if you get the Sullivan Center set up and fully operational,
they are set up. In fact, I went to the award ceremony while I was up in D.C. last week for the Iraq meeting. And they had an award that Dr. Cochran was awarded for him speaking at March 13th of last year about the Gulf War and research that's being done at the VA that they had not shared with the public at large. So he was awarded the award for the year, and was very beautiful ceremony. And that was on the 23rd. Up in D.C. It was just a beautiful function. We had Rick Wiederman there. We had Jim Benz there. We had Anthony Hardy, myself in attendance, Angie, Leah Steele, Pierre Sullivan, the father, spoke. Dan spoke. His mother's also involved, Jeannie. We had Robert Miller there, who's the Associate Professor of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine at Vanderbilt. And he was the one finding the lung problems in the burn pit situation. We also had Mark Lyles, who was written up a study he did on the metals that are being exposed to us in the Gulf, in the Iraq area. So we're hoping he calls in. Doug, if you can break away and get him to call the Sullivan Center, I can give you the phone number.
Well, ask the producer to break in.
I don't know. We might just have to go on and reschedule.
Yeah, he's not calling. We're waiting.
Can you call him at 855-748-7855?
That's too fast.
855-748-7855.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
And see if we get him on the line. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things that are happening. I mean, the town hall meetings are starting. We did have the town hall meeting since the last show at the Ileana Danville VA Medical Center.
Did you go to that one, Doug?
Yeah, I went to that one, and I had met with the new director, Japhet Rivera, here, and along with the chief of chaplains. And so we had things set up ahead before we went in the meeting. So as far as the director for the Ileana VA Medical Center, the meeting went very well. However, the Chicago regional office, again, presented a lot of problems. And, again, the arrogance that came on down was just mind-boggling, but nothing different, nothing new on what we've seen with the regional offices. So there's a problem there. But we got a lot of hope here. In the meantime, between the time that we do, we're recording the show here on Wednesday, and when it airs on Sunday, and we can talk about a week from now, I'll have the opportunity to go into the actual burn pit medical exam and find out what's happening there. So that, again, is really crucial. And, again, that comes out of the wrist. All the documentation is coming out of the wrist, but it starts at your regular VA medical center.
Hey, what was the name of the guest?
Dan Sullivan.
Dan Sullivan, is he around?
Who is this, our producer?
They're looking him up right now. Yeah, this is the board up.
Okay, his cell phone number, let me give you that, 202-340-6724.
All right, they said they're looking him up. It was some organization who picked up. Is that correct?
Well, try the cell phone number. Just disconnect and call the cell phone.
Dan, hi. This is Jason from Warrior Connection, Doug Roeke show. You were supposed to be on. Are you available?
Hello?
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, because they're on the line right now on the phone. So hold on one second, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, he's on. One second now.
All right.
You can talk to him now.
Dan.
Hello? Hi. Dan. Yeah, I've been trying to call, and it wouldn't let me in. Or it was
okay,
just
well, we
ringing.
Fixed that problem. We had him call you, so we've got you on
okay.
board. So, Dan, I kind of introduced you as a brother of Thomas, Tom. Marine Corps veteran. So I'd like you to tell us about the setting up of this Sullivan Center, which we intend to do, the matching funds for research, all that. So I'll let you get started.
So my brother served in Iraq, and he when he came back, he started to develop, actually while he was there, and when he came back, he started to develop symptoms that were unusual, including pain, and he started to bleed out of his gastrointestinal system, and slowly over the course of 4 years, his condition degenerated, and through that time, he was never able to really receive a diagnosis from his doctors. Shortly before his death, he was sent to a specialty care clinic for service members with psychosomatic illness at Walter Reed Medical Center, and then a few months later he was dead. His autopsy revealed severe cardiopulmonary issues that could have been detected by certain tests had they been done by his physicians, but the tests had not been done. And so we met with his doctors afterwards to try to figure out why, on the one hand, my mother, my father, my brother's widow, and in some cases my sister. We were trying to figure out what happened. Why did this? Why did he go to the doctors for 4 years and basically get told that there was nothing objectively that they could say was wrong with him? Well, to our eyes, it looked like his body was swelling. He had the symptoms of heart disease, and also basically looked like he was dying. But his doctors kept saying it was okay. So
how old was he?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
How old was he?
When he died, he was 30 years old.
30 years old. And when did he die?
February 16th, 2009 I found his body on that day. We're not exactly sure when we think he died. The date of his death is February 16th, 2009. When we met with his doctors, his primary care physician told us that he had believed that my brother had a somatoform disorder, and had treated him as such, and that's why they hadn't done certain things like an echocardiogram, which would have detected some of the heart damage. So, and we asked one of the doctors whether whether they knew if anyone else had had similar symptoms, and he paused for a long time and said, "I don't know anyone who has had that exact same cluster of symptoms." So we knew then that, that there were people out there that had must have similar symptoms, and we knew also that that there was this underlying tendency, it appeared, to diagnose people with medically unexplained symptoms or psychosomatic illness. So what we realized then is that what we learned over the intervening years is that what my brother basically at the time that he was receiving care from Walter Reed and the DOD medical care system, there was in place, and there's still in place to some extent, clinical practice guidelines that were developed after the 1991 Gulf War, which essentially from which doctors draw the inference that service members serving in that theater of conflict are uniquely prone to developing psychosomatic illnesses. The guidelines tell you that you're supposed to rule out physiological etiology before concluding that something is psychosomatic, but in practice what happens is that people come back with symptoms of heart, lung, and nerve damage and musculoskeletal damage, autoimmune diseases, and so forth and so on. And these get lumped into this psychosomatic category or treated as if they're caused by stress rather than what they in fact actually are, which are symptoms of occupational and environmental injuries in the war theater. What we now recognize that there is, and I think that there are doctors, physicians, and researchers within the VA, the DOD, and independent sector, and advocates, and so forth and so on, that the science is pretty clear on this, that occupational exposures and environmental exposures are the most likely explanation for the type of physiological symptoms that that veterans have after being exposed to what are known to be toxic chemicals and combination of a variety of environmental hazards that are unique to deployment. And so we now, the organization focuses on funding independent research on environmental and occupational military exposures and raising public awareness about the existence and prevalence of toxic wounds and the need for the American people, the government, and our armed forces to stand up, honor, and recognize and provide health care to all of our service members and veterans who have been wounded with environmental injuries over the course of their duty, their work for the country.
Dan, before we go much further, let's talk about the studies right now that you're doing fund matching for, and let's give out an address for donations.
Sure. The studies that we have already funded are one study at National Jewish Health. We've one of our the studies we've funded in part is to identify biomarkers to help diagnose deployment-related lung diseases like constrictive bronchiolitis, so that you could use biomarkers like a blood test or use special equipment to identify and diagnose the illness without having to do a surgical lung biopsy. Another study we're funding, we've started funding at Georgetown University Medical Center, is to do the same thing, to develop biomarkers so that it would be easier to have a clear diagnosis of Gulf War illness. The next study that we also funded a study at Stony Brook Medical School to help map out genomic changes from exposure to inhalational toxins from the Middle East. The study that we plan to fund next, we're still in the process of trying to identify a facility that can do this research, but we think it's incredibly important And we think that it is also something that has not been really fully addressed by any institution that we can find, identify yet. And it spans the Gulf War and the post-9/11 era wars, and that's the gastrointestinal symptoms that Gulf War veterans and post-9/11 era veterans are suffering, which can be incredibly severe and debilitating. They were one of my brother's worst complaints. And the deployment-related gastrointestinal disease, what we might call it, has not been mapped out. It hasn't been described as far as I can see. And we really think that there's a need to have some diagnostic criteria and plans for treatment for that. So that's the next thing. In terms of donations, our website is www.sgtsullivancenter.org or sergeantsullivancenter.org. If you just Google Sergeant Sullivan, you can get there and then hit the Get Involved button, and there's a way of doing online donations there. And you can also mail donations to the Sergeant Thomas Joseph Sullivan Center at 1250 Connecticut Avenue Northwest, Suite 200, Washington, D.C., 20036.
We want to repeat that one more time.
Sure. Donations can be mailed to the Sergeant Thomas Joseph Sullivan Center at 1250 Connecticut Avenue Northwest, Suite 200, Washington, D.C., 20036.
Okay. And, Dan, we need to talk after the show because there is a GI expert out in California, Dr. Chia, and I can give you contact info on that. But he's got a direct line on the GI problems, and that's a very worthy project. I want to tell people this is something I dreamed about doing. And when I've met the family, I was so excited because I was trying to network us to, like, the Intrepid Center out of New York that funded and equipped, got the building built in a year down in San Antonio for the Intrepid Center for recovery of the vets with amputations and all. And I was in love with the idea of founding a nonprofit for this type of independent research that's not funded by government, be it the CDMRP program at DOD or by the VA itself. So it's a definite need. We also have a need to get the advocacy working, and that means our veteran family members, friends, to become involved. They need to see the veteran. They need to hear from the veteran and the family members. There is so much work to be done, and I know that we've been talking about how that's going to become involved. I want to mention that all the organizations are forming up with the Sullivan Center, be it ANVETS, be it VVA. All the organizations are coming together to support this effort, and I'm just delighted to have you on the program. Want to have you talk more about when you formed the organization and what spurred that to happen, which is probably the death of your brother.
You know, sir, it's so scary because the respiratory, the cardiovascular problems, the gastrointestinal problems were all known from day one during Desert Storm, as we've talked about and was discussed, obviously, at the CDC conference and everything since. And the loss of your brother is horrible, but now what you're proposing, sir, and what you're trying to do with the Sullivan Center is a dream come true.
Yes, it is. I think you just made a really good point about the tragedy of this. And it's so clear now, in retrospect, when you look at what happened after Desert Storm, when you look at the health risks that were known, what happened with Gulf War illness and the fight for recognition and health care that Gulf War veterans have been fighting for so long, the risks of going to war in that region were known. And yet the doctors providing health care to veterans coming back from post 9/11 Iraq weren't prepared. Or if they were prepared, they were taught to look at the symptoms as psychosomatic. And it's awful. It's awful because we've had to repeat the cycle when there was no reason to do so. And I think that the promise of what we can accomplish today with the Sergeant Sullivan Center and with this growing coalition of people who've been fighting this fight for, you know, decades, is that we can come together around the issue of toxic wounds, and we can, in a strong voice, demand health care for these wounds, demand recognition for these wounds, and demand honor be restored to those from whom it has been taken by a policy of denying the existence of these wounds and depriving people of health care for them. And the good thing about this, the most promising thing about this, is that truth and science is on our side, because it's clear, you know. I mean, there's a lot of information about insufficient data being that comes out of the VA and the DOD. If you look at it carefully, it's just cautiously worded. You can't deny the existence of these wounds or that toxic and environmental exposures are toxic and cause health problems. It's just these things are pretty well established. And I think that as we come together and work with doctors and researchers in the independent sector, we can really change things and help end this cycle of denial. At least that's what I hope. So I'm glad that we're kind of all seeing the promise of this, of the possibility of working together and helping make sure that that this doesn't continue to happen generation after generation after generation. And another great thing about this is how it's becoming intergenerational. I mean, we've got people coming together from who were involved in the Vietnam and Persian Gulf War and the post 9/11 wars, researchers who've been working on these issues for years, all coming together and saying, "Gosh, you know, we can really fix this now," and I hope that we can. I really believe we can.
I think one of the most frightening things about this, and Denise was present, and this goes back to the Center for Disease Control conference we had in end of February, early March of 1999. One of our team members, Colonel Dr. Adris Kornegibath, who coined the term LS-CAN disease, which is all the respiratory, cardiac, and gastrointestinal problems, as an Army doctor on site, he had pointed out that what we were seeing with all these toxic exposures is the same thing as what we're seeing in the civilian population, except here we had an extremely healthy cohort group that had acute exposures, and now we've seen incredible medical problems developing over all the years, and the numbers, including your brother, that have died are just staggering. And it's frightening to me that we're still having, so many years later, we're having to fight for the medical care. And then as we launch, and I guess what I would have called it is Gulf War III, so we're going in again with depleted uranium, blowing everything up, same contamination. We've got all of the nightmare down in Africa where they're supposedly sending Army units in to work with Ebola, and we know perfectly well. And Denise, you ran a field hospital that us not nowhere near prepared to deal with this stuff. And it just seems like we have to put some common sense back into it, sir. And Sullivan Center seems to be leading the charge from what I've just heard.
Dan, when was the organization formed?
We formed in 2010.
2010. You've done a lot of work in a short period of time, and we we want to emphasize this is going to matter. Donations, small, large, what have you. If you have contacts, and I have a few that I'll be working on shortly to get informed about the Sullivan Center and to make donations for this independent research, we need to activate. The VA has not done well on this 24, 25 years since the Gulf War, much less how they handled Agent Orange. Agent Orange, you know, they look and see what you develop, and if finally the statistics look good, they add it as a presumption, and they treat you for the diagnosed conditions. And if you're on the presumptive list for them, you'll get covered. If not, you know, you got to wait until more die. This is ridiculous. They did not have everything then that we have now as far as work on biomarkers, genetics, and really being able to gear in on what is actually happening in the body so it can be diagnosed effectively. And then the treatment would be, you know, really geared to what the biomarkers are showing. I tell vets that my hope lies in the research area to get us answers to help save lives. And it's very hard to convince the vets when they're going homeless, breaking up families, to deal with it when they're fighting just for their claims. The VA's got to clean up their act and clean it up now and fast. To treat vets as though it's stress or psychosomatic is not right. In 2004, the Research Advisory Committee presented a report. I felt, putting it to bed at that time, that it was not stress-related, that we did not need stress studies. We have convinced the VA to quit funding stress studies. When we first started the RAC, almost every study, 99.9%, were stress-directed, and some of them weren't even related to Gulf War at all. And so that's why this former nurse major stepped out and started doing whatever I could to get that change, joining in force to get the RAC committee by legislation, pushing on the VA to stop the studies on stress, to get it right. So the RAC committed and had a report in 2004, 2 years after they started meeting. In 2008, they had another formal report come out, and then again here April of 2014. So our RAC committee, I have to take my hat off to each of the researchers and dedicated people like Mr. Jim Benz, who was our chairman, Leah Steele, Patrice Galam out in San Francisco, Dr. Meggs out in East Carolina State. Every researcher that has extended themselves to become involved, they truly care people. They are not making outrageous sums of money on the research. They got involved because we reached out many times to them and got them involved. Dr. Bronick at Georgetown had put out a study with civilian chronic fatigue that I read, and I said, we've got to get him involved. We got him involved. Dr. Nancy Klimas out of Florida, Roberta White, and the gang up in Boston. These people are not making money. They are trying to help. Yes, they're paid for their time and their assistance time. But, you know, we have to pay them something. They can't do it on nothing. And a lot of times the VA research does not have any external people serving on it to choose what is funded. And for the VA, you have to be a VA researcher. I think it's 5/8 or 7/8 employment time with the VA to be able to qualify for the VA research. That is exactly why former Representative Kachinik and now Senator Sanders decided to try to get us into the DOD, Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program, which got started around 2005. We've done excellent work through that. The first year I served on a peer review panel, we had $5 million. We had 33 studies put in. Doesn't stretch very far. We're up to $20 million a year, and that takes dedicated effort of lobbying the senators and congressmen to sign on with our supporters each year to get that funding through defense appropriations for our GovWar illness research program.
Hey,
we have other studies that are not getting funded for whatever reason, and this center is going to help us get those independent researchers funded so that we can get to the answers quicker.
You know, I've got to run down the hallway to my doctor's appointment.
Okay.
But continue on. I'd like you to tell the listeners more about your brother and about the center and everything else. And Denise, if you can get this out, this would be critical. Thank you, sir, for joining us on Warrior Connection. Denise, you guys continue the conversation, please.
I will.
Okay. Thank you.
Dan, let's see, your father's directly involved. Tell us about your father.
My father actually used to work for the Department of Defense in trade security and some other things as well, but his final position was in trade security. And he's retired from that job for several years, and now he volunteers as the chair of our Science and Advisory Policy Committee, and he serves, Policy and Science Advisory Panel, and he on the board of directors as well of the organization.
Hopefully our producer can disconnect that
phone. Okay. Should I keep going or wait till...
Yes, we'll keep going.
If you'd like to make a call,
okay.
Please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
Oh, I hope this helps. Okay. Go ahead.
So he heads up the Science and Policy Advisory Panel. And,
if you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
I'm having trouble focusing with this thing going. And he basically devotes full time.
Let me see if I can get the producer on the line.
This should stop in a minute.
Well, this is a problem that we run into with it.
Usually it just stops. Hold on. Give it a minute and it'll stop. I remember back when I used to have a phone. Well, I don't know whether it's going to stop.
Yeah, I'm trying to call him on my cell phone to get him keyed in. Creating a problem of us finishing up the show, but hold on. I was afraid that would happen with Doug's phone. Okay, so your father's involved, I think.
I can't hear you.
I know, because of this phone.
These things are supposed to stop doing it. They shouldn't keep doing this.
Yeah, I know. It's supposed to stop.
Is there a way to restart it?
I'm trying to call on my cell phone to see if I can get them to... because we're not going to be able to talk through this. To our listeners, please bear with us for a minute. Ah, it stopped.
It looks like it stopped. Okay.
Thank goodness. Sorry for that interruption for our audience. We're back with Dan Sullivan, and we were talking about his father that... heads up the organization, and your mother is also involved, too.
Yeah, my mother is on the board of directors as well, and she's not as much involved as day-to-day business as my father is, but she is the treasurer and does a lot of the development work, and she was actually the person who came up with the idea of creating the organization. she said she, during the meetings we had with Tom's doctors, is when she started to come up with the idea of creating an organization that could help, service members and veterans who had medically complicated or medically unexplained symptoms. That was the initial idea behind this. And that we used that terminology actually at the beginning, and it's still in our mission statement, that our mission is to help service members and help improve health care for service members and veterans with medically unexplained or medically complicated symptoms. But, you know, the interesting thing about that is that the term medically unexplained symptoms is something that was, I think, is used primarily by the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Defense to describe symptoms that are really not medically unexplained symptoms. They're symptoms of environmental exposures and toxic wounds. You know, part of our mission, I think, is to reclaim the language and use the language that is scientifically and medically appropriate. You know, we're talking about stress. I think that stress is an important role, plays an important role in exacerbating, these health problems. But I think it's a different type of stress than the stress of post-traumatic stress disorder or the combat stress, both of which are clearly also wounds of war, but that have an impact. But the type of stress that I'm talking about, I think, is a stress that I saw in my brother and the stress I see in other people, and that's the stress of receiving health care from an institution that is telling you you're not physically sick when you so obviously are physically sick. And it creates a sense of horrible mistrust between the provider and the patient, and I think it causes stress for the provider as well as to the patient, because you've got a situation where you're physically sick, you may be bleeding 8 times a day out of your gastrointestinal system, your body is swelling, you can't breathe, you can't run, you've got horrible pain. You can see and feel these things, and outside observers can see and feel these things, and yet you go to a doctor, and the doctor tells you there's nothing objectively wrong with you, and you probably ought to go to psychotherapy and take an antidepressant.
Right.
And it's like taking away the identity of the person by telling them that what they know is happening to them isn't really happening to them. It's tragic, it's awful, and I think that it hastens death, because it deprives the patient of the tools and knowledge that he or she needs in order to seek appropriate care for the symptoms. I think that when we talk about stress, we ought to look at what that relationship does to degrade the patient's condition, because
right.
I think it does. Yeah.
You know, anytime you have a chronic debilitating illness, you're going to have depression and stress to deal with. Mm-hmm. But this is even a higher level when the government you served is dragging their feet and not wanting to tell the truth. And that is one of the reasons I stepped forward early on, was when I heard them saying early on what the weather was or the winds were. I was there along with thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of vets. I knew what the wind was. Mm-hmm. That's when I said, this is wrong. I have to step out and do my heart, whatever that is. And it has been a struggle since we returned, and people were sick in theater, and then they some of them developed the symptoms later. When you're young in age, you try to deny any problem you have health-wise, and you keep going until you drop. Mm-hmm. And not telling the truth, having doctors that their hands are tied, and I've had VA doctors tell me that in the past, because of the government's unwillingness to acknowledge fully, firmly, over and over, acknowledge that there was physical damage And that stress in itself, mm-hmm. when you go into a doctor at the VA or the DOD, and, you know, we knew about the program at Walter Reed years ago. I nicknamed it Camp Happy. They just wanted you to be happy. Well, you can't be happy when you know your body's deteriorating and that there is something definitely wrong. You go to civilian doctors, and the civilian doctors may not have any military training, have no knowledge of exposures of what has occurred overseas, be it low-level chemical, be it the use of protostigmine bromide, be it the vaccines, be it the wildfire smoke, be it the heavy metals, be it the long list that continues on and on. They are not educated in that in medical school. They really aren't. And we need to, you know, in the future hit curriculums in medical school. But the occupational health is one area. Environmental medicine is another area. Environmental medicine is sometimes deemed the far wing of the medical establishment. But they have been trying to help people for years with environmental exposures. And to have them have been denied, and I know some of the environmental doctors that went to the secretary of the VA when we returned in 91, they pleaded to let them be part of helping and training the VA doctors to help us. That wasn't done. So we still have a problem of doctors not being educated and informed. And what kills me as a nurse that was master's degree, critical care, to see this happening and to see the doctors not even do the appropriate diagnostic procedures to rule things out. And this is what happened to your brother.
It's terrible. There's so much information out there that doctors could be given in with continuing medical education. The VA and the DOD should really be heading up this type of stuff, but they're not. But so that actually one of the things that we have done and I want to do more of is sponsor continuing medical education for healthcare providers. Except what we did was a little bit different. We sponsored it for healthcare providers for deployment related lung disease at Stony Brook Medical School. That's actually the first thing we did in when we started. And we helped bring together a community of doctors and patients. So the patients also went to the continuing medical education, veterans advocates and caregivers, because there was no other way for them to get information about the health impacts of their airborne exposures they suffered and the lung injuries they had, other than to come to this particular thing. But there's such possibility here for continuing medical education. I was at the RAC meeting that you mentioned earlier. What amazing stuff these researchers are doing to identify the pathologies that result in Gulf War illness, neuroinflammation models, things that explain or might explain the types of symptoms my brother had, the types of symptoms Gulf War veterans have, the types of symptoms so many people that I've met have. If we were to be able to turn these types of presentations into continuing medical education modules that could then be provided to independent physicians, what we could do is we could start to educate doctors around the country about deployment-related illnesses, military and occupational exposures, so that appropriate care could be delivered. If it can't be delivered at the VA and the DOD, then it can be delivered by the independent sector.
Right. But I do want to say that I have pushed for these programs at the RAC and for our researchers to be videotaped to put mm-hmm. those out. I have pushed for live webinars so that they could plug in from VAs, from anywhere, to listen in when the RAC is presenting and have the researchers there. We don't know what direction the RAC will be going since they're replacing the chairman and the rest of our panel all within a year, so we will have to wait and see what they do. But we have pushed for that to be live, presented and videotaped and gotten out there. there is a wealth since 02, since they started meeting, that, I mean, almost every meeting, if not every other meeting, I was bringing this up, that this was an ideal situation to videotape and get out to the doctors. We are running out of time for the day. I know the music could key up shortly, and that'll be our clue to shut off. But, Dan, would love to have you or your father on the program again, probably in a couple of weeks, and we'll pick up and do some more on this and put the plug out there more and more for the advocacy that is needed and for the research. And real quickly, give us the address again to mail in donations.
Sure. It's the Sergeant Thomas Joseph Sullivan Center, 1250 Connecticut Avenue Northwest, Suite 200. It's really important to put the Suite 200 there for the mail to get to us. Washington, D.C., 20036. And I should also mention that we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so all donations that are sent to us are tax deductible.
And we look forward to having you back on the program or your father. We also have your liaison program there with a veteran.
That's,
and
here
that's
comes
right.
That's the Will Wisner,
so
our veteran
you.
Fellow for mission leadership.
Right. Thank you to Gary Knoll.
Thanks,
for providing this radio program so we can get the news and information out to veterans, family members, supporters. Please listen in on our program. We have these programs archived. Also, this program will air this coming weekend. Thank you. Thank you to our guest of the Sullivan Center. And thank you to Doug Roeke for being on in between his doctor's appointments today. I'm Denise Nichols, retired major, and Dan Sullivan, our guest. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Denise.